In recent years, this program has interviewed many critics of Cardinal George Pell, including authors David Marr and Lucy Morris Marr. So when a book with a different perspective on George Pell is released, we thought we should also take a look at it. Last April, the High Court of Australia unanimously overturned Cardinal Pell's convictions for child sexual abuse. Writer Keith Windschuttle got to work on his own book, which has the provocative title, The Persecution of George Pell. Now, despite the court decision, of course, the Royal Commission was very critical of Cardinal Pell, and I do raise this point in our discussion. What did your book uncover about relations between the Victoria Police and the Catholic Church? Were relations between the church and the Victorian Police fractured? Had they broken down?
Eventually they did, but for the first 15 years of the Melbourne response, which was the institution that Pell set up with an independent former QC to run and to investigate cases and mainly to pay compensation to claimants, for the first 15 years they did that in consultation and with the approval of Victoria Police and the Victoria Police hierarchy up until 2012, when the whole thing seemed to break down. There was one, well, publicly anyway, one big reason why that happened. A detective from Ballarat put out a report, which was then immediately leaked to the press, saying that of 43 former child abuse victims had committed suicide in Ballarat alone. When an alternative investigation later was writing a report for the Victorian Parliamentary Inquiry, which was basically founded on the sensation caused by that report, the second investigation by the police could only confirm that one out of those 43 had committed suicide. But that information didn't occur. No one leaked it until 2.5 years later, when I think John Ferguson of The Australian got that story. So from 2012, when that report first appeared, the whole relationship between the Catholic Church and the Melbourne response and the police turned around. And soon after, Graham Ashton became police commissioner, he announced the police were going to charge Pell. The whole story of this was played out in the media from day one, creating a public climate that was very hostile to George Pell, and which I've argued, by the time that occurred, the public climate, certainly in Victoria, was such that it would be very difficult to raise a jury that was not already prejudiced against Pell.
All right, let's talk about what you say is the beginning of this campaign against Cardinal George Pell. There was this thing called Operation Tethering. Details of it were released, I think, in early 2018 when the committal hearing was on in the Magistrates Court. What did that reveal about Operation Tethering?
Well, it revealed that the police had been in pursuit of Pell since at least February 2013. And they were after him not just for not pursuing other priests in cases of child abuse where there'd been accusations, but they were after him as a perpetrator of child sexual abuse himself. I've argued in my book that they were borrowing a technique that was then new to the British police, where they'd use it in Wales in houses of correction against young people, and they found if they advertised for young people to come forward saying, have you been abused in the juvenile correction institution or the welfare institution for young people, without having any accusations. And they got a lot of people who applied. And the Victorian police adopted the same technique. They advertised in 2015 for somebody who might have had sexual abuse in St Patrick's Cathedral in Melbourne at the time when Pell was the Archbishop.
Let's talk about another issue, though, that for many people damned George Pell for a very long time. And it goes to a photograph of George Pell walking into court with Gerard Ridsdale, whom no one doubts was a serial paedophile, 130 cases at least. That photograph, what do you think that did to his image?
Thanks to its prominence, which the media devoted to that photograph, it's sort of stuck. It's memorable. And the photograph is of Gerald Ridsdale going to court. He's got dark sunglasses on. He looks like, you know, he's guilty as hell just from the photograph. And George is next to him. The photograph itself doesn't say George is supporting Ridsdale. And as one of my predecessors at Quadrant magazine, Frank Devine, pointed out, priests were commonly accompanying people who were accused of serious crimes to the courthouse. Convicted murderers used to get a priest that accompanied them to the gallows. to give them the last rites. It used to be a normal, expected thing. But this was turned around in the early 2000s, largely, I've argued, by a story on the Channel 9 program, 60 Minutes, which said that Pell and Ridsdale were not only, you know, associated with the trial of Gerald Ridsdale himself, but they'd been at school together, they'd attended seminaries together, and as young priests, they shared a house together, which made it look as if they were long-term mates. And, of course, if you're that close to somebody, if you believe what 60 Minutes said, then you'd believe that Pell himself was involved. Now, in my book, I've tried to show that all those claims by 60 Minutes are wrong. They weren't at school together. They went to different primary schools. Ridsdale was at the same high school, but he was there years before Pell came. Ridsdale left St. Patrick's High School in Ballarat in 1948. Pell didn't arrive there until 1954, and the same was true of the seminaries. They both attended Corpus Christi Seminary, but Ridsdale only stayed there for a short time. That was long before Pell went to St. Patrick's.
Another thing, though, that surely damned Archbishop or Cardinal Pell, as he was by then, in the eyes of many people, was a pretty disastrous moment in the witness box in early 2016 in the Royal Commission, where he made a comment about an abused case of clerical sexual abuse. He said, "It was a very sad story, but it was of no particular interest to me." How much effect do you think that must have had?
Well, that came sort of late in the piece. As far as the police and the media who had targeted Pell, that was sort of confirmation of things they'd been saying for some time then, for a couple of years then. But it was a bad mistake, as I acknowledge in the book. He criticised previous bishops who hadn't pursued the child sexual abuse issue among priests strongly enough. He'd been interrogated by both the chair of the Royal Commission from Sydney on a video link and by the counsel for the Royal Commission who was trying to nail him on some issue, and he made a slip, and he apologised for it a couple of days later. But people remember the slip and they don't remember the circumstances and they don't remember the other points that he made, which
well, but we still can't get around this point, that the Royal Commission, Keith, did say, and these are their words, that "we are satisfied that by 1973 Cardinal Pell was not only conscious of child sexual abuse by clergy, but that he had also considered measures of avoiding situations which might provoke gossip about it. They found that as a young priest, he did know that there was sexual abuse in the church and he'd failed to act on it." I mean, it's hard to get around that conclusion, isn't it?
Not if you actually read the evidence that the Royal Commission provides, because there is none. It's pure speculation on their part. I've written, you know, devoted a lot of attention to that claim. They say it's inconceivable Pell didn't know. Well, it's perfectly conceivable. They didn't find one other person who said, yes, Pell knew at the time. Some of their findings were quite contradictory. They found that one priest at one stage had an early knowledge of Gerald Ridsdale's behaviour in the 1970s, but later on in the same report, they say this same priest didn't find out about Ridsdale, didn't know about him until the 1990s. The Royal Commission uses the term inconceivable in its report on what happened at Ballarat 18 times in 18 cases. The word inconceivable is a fallback position for them, saying we don't have any evidence of this, but we'd like to believe it.
The High Court of Australia, in giving that unanimous acquittal, said that there was a significant possibility that an innocent person had been convicted. What do you say to the suggestion that George Pell got off on a technicality?
That is just a misinterpretation of what the High Court's judgment was. The High Court acquitted Pell. It set him free. It exonerated him. It's not a technicality. Innocent until proven guilty is a fundamentality. It's a legal fundamentality which no one can escape from. If you're accused of a crime, you're either guilty or you're innocent. There's no not proven verdict possible in Australia. That's possible, I think, still maybe in the Scottish courts. But in our legal system, the one we've inherited from England, you are innocent until proven guilty. And the presumption of innocence is a basic principle of legal freedoms and legal processes in criminal cases in Australia.
That's Keith Windschuttle, author of the controversial new book called The Persecution of George Pell. Now, if this story has raised any issues for you, you can contact Lifeline on 131114.